Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Dude, could you imagine the boomer posting from a guy who's 1,000 years old?
Right?
like it's not even minion memes, it's all like cuneiform memes, but with the same like the same like minions. Text. Yeah. Boys here, the internet's number one female-led podcast is back with more of what you wanted. I am your host, Peter O'Donoghue, and I am desecrating cultural sites in third world countries, and I am joined by...
It's me, Ethan Palmer, and no Jamie this week because he's giving a handjob to Angelina Jolie.
Ooh, some heavy petting?
Yeah, exactly. Over the clothes is how she likes it.
Yeah, it's a prom.
Yeah. And Jamie wasn't sure he was going to go. He was really committed to... doing the Lore Boys this week, but you know, pretty insistent, and you know, he's got a good thing going with her. She's rich, he's hoping to make a buck, so it's the only reason Jamie got with Angelina Jolie was for the money, obviously.
Yeah, he's gonna be a great sugar baby and stepfather to her two adopted children, who I think are both like our age at this point. Oh my god. Anyway, today's episode about Tomb Raider was requested by Leslie04 and also sort of requested by patron Darkside Bunny, though he had asked specifically for the OG PS1 games, which I have never played, but in the past 2 weeks over the holidays, I crushed the new Survivor trilogy of Tomb Raider and really, really enjoyed 2 and 3 a ton, so here we go. You're welcome, Leslie. And also, shout out and welcome to our New Year new patrons, just an absolute... Like four of a kind banger names: Cletus Velveeta, don't tickle me, Bleak Victory, and Mike Jones. And I left a little note here for myself: as I admire your no nonsense username, Mr. Jones.
I will say, thank you, patrons, for supporting the show. If you want to become a patron, support the show, patreon.com/theloreboys. I will say those I saw those names pop up in our shared inbox as well and had a chuckle at every single one of them. Also, yeah.
just the immediate, because Mike Jones is the most recent one, where it's just like the, it's like, no, silly season is over. It's just like, like slam the brakes on right there. Don't tickle me, a specific shout out here. I was talking to them in chat at some point. I was like, oh yeah, like I'd subscribe, like in our fitness channel on the Discord linked below. It was just like, oh, I'd subscribe for some blah 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 or whatever. And I was like, would you subscribe for Jacked BT from Titanfall 2? And did a very quick sketch of like muscle man body with just the Titan's head. And yeah, then like 40 minutes later, we got a new patron. I was like, I'm very, very, very glad I could trick you into joining our cult here.
It's got to be worth it, right? It's just got to be.
I hope so. I was hoping to turn it into a t-shirt over the holidays, but I was too busy and then hungover. So
there you go.
I intend on launching that.
I did bring it up in a chat in the Discord, which you may not have seen, Peter, but I think we can sell our Skaven art now of Steamboat Willie, because Steamboat Willie is public domain, right?
Oh, get fucked, Disney!
Right? I'm pretty sure we can just take that and put it on a t-shirt now.
Yo, remind me, because I sent that to people for, I sent that to friend of the show, Bobby of Bobby and Whitney fame, because he wanted to put it on a t-shirt. I was like, I can't sell it. Here's the Photoshop file. Do with it what you will. That rules, dude. Yeah. Okay, remind me, because get fucked. we've been sitting on that. You know, this show's a great investment.
we gotta draw a bunch of other Disney characters and just wait years until they become public domain.
Centuries, yeah. So, Ethan. Jamie, I know, owns and has never played the first new Tomb Raider, but have you played any of the new ones or any Tomb Raider? Excuse me, it's like Attorneys General. At all, ever? PS1, PS2, something?
I've beaten the first of the new ones.
Okay.
I played that one through on my roommate's PS3, I want to say.
Yeah.
Way back in the day. I had never played another one. I really enjoyed that one. I think it's like exact. It's funny on the bonus content. If you want to hear the bonus content, subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com. You mentioned on the bonus content, like the comparison between Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed. And when I played the first of the new trilogy way back in the day, I looking back on it now, I'm like, I had stopped playing Assassin's Creed altogether, which I really enjoyed when I was younger. For reasons which we've discussed before on the show, Assassin's Creed, you know, is good for what it is, I guess, but it's not exactly what I'm looking for most of the time.
Yeah.
But Tomb Raider, like, scratched that itch for me very well in that it was, like, you know, some platforming. There was, you know, like, single player story, you know, that you're just kind of, like, action adventuring through your way through, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah. I, because of the Steam summer sale, I got the third one for $12. I was like, oh, you know, just because I'm going to do an episode about this, I should see how far I can get before needing to write a script in the first one. It's probably like the third one was $12. The first, I was like, it's probably $3. Turns out I owned it. Had no fucking idea. Excuse me. I played it for 40 minutes just to get the context for what they were looking for, get the keywords back in there, get a couple screenshots. And I was like, all right, baby, that's first person research. Let's do it. Let's go straight to the source. Yeah. So like I said, I definitely recommend them here. Pete's seal of approval. One quick thing about the second and third games, do the optional tombs. That is where that game, that's the S tier content. They all give you a unique reward. Like a skill or a passive or something like that, or like pieces of legendary gear, and they're just so much fun. Like it's you got to use all your tools. You got to remember what everything does. And unlike Assassin's Creed, the Tomb Raider games are not fucking automated. So it's like, I hope you remember how to use everything for this puzzle, because you're not going to be able to solve it otherwise. And it's always worth it. I very much like that. So for our episode here. The protagonist, Lara Croft, it's very much like the reboot prequel territory where they're like, well, how did Lara get her triangle boobies and her dual pistols?
Yeah.
Out of the four things I just talked about, none of them are in the new trilogy. So
not triangle boobies nor double pistols.
No guns akimbo either at no point. it's a very bow focused. Like the bow and arrow is not only...
Yeah.
You know, stronger than every gun in the game. This thing like she makes out of branches.
Most games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I can't believe the Chinese ever had to invent gunpowder to deter the Mongol hordes. Because the bow, they just like shoot a bunch of arrows at the Great Wall, it'll just collapse. Fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
And just like bing, 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 bing. Yeah, but it is really good. Her backstory, everything is very much explained in those games, so we're not going to get into those. Like, what I usually do is, like, look, these games are more, like, recent enough. If you're curious as to how Lara Croft became the Tomb Raider, fucking play them. Like, the trilogy is $20 or less USD, certainly, if the third was 12 CAD, right? So
probably, yeah.
So what I want to get into today is the kind of the supernatural MacGuffins that are the target of each game, as well as their real-world counterparts, because they're all inspired by, and in some cases are a fusion of, real mythology or religious iconography, and you love counterparts, so.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite bands, if not my favorite band, so.
Exactly. So this one, this might unlock some ye olde memories back when you had a roommate. The first mystery in the first game in the original new Tomb Raider, concerns the Kingdom of Yamatai, which was an island kingdom somewhere east of Japan out in the Pacific Ocean, located in a treacherous part of the ocean in game called the Devil's Triangle. The game kind of adapts the real Yamatai, which, as far as we know, did exist, and kind of combines it into this new thing that is at both points Bermuda Triangle and Atlantis, like Japanese Atlantis, basically.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And that's like the whole purpose of that first game, is getting to that island and solving the mystery there.
Yeah, so from the first one, like, I don't remember too much. Like, I do remember being on a Pacific island, and like there's a group of bad Tomb Raiders, people who are going to other white people who are going to plunder these ancient tombs of another culture for bad intent, not for good intent,
for bad profit. I'm gonna put it in my cathedral in Croft Manor. These guys were gonna, I don't know, sell it for money or something like that.
Exactly. How ignoble. But that's really like all I remember is that you're like, you're fighting against these other people who are trying to get this. And I think it's like Uncharted where it's like, there's like, there is magic, right? Like the artifacts
are
powerful. Eh? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's not like, or like Indiana Jones, all the stuff that would have inspired this, like the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant wasn't a metaphor. It does melt
people's
guys, face. Right?
face.
The Ark of the Covenant wasn't in us all along, right? It is real. On Yamatai, it's like, it does go... So those guys are not actually... they are bad white people, classic. Mm-hmm. They are not alternate Tomb Raiders. They are actually a cult formed around one of the characters we're going to talk about on the island of Yamatai. And their plane was taken down in the 80s, I believe, by the Dragon's Triangle. So they're actually stranded there and realized, like, wow, this bitch has ghost samurais. We should probably worship her or else she'll skin us alive.
Which is fair. I would worship a big lady with ghost samurai.
Me too.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a safe bet, especially when I crash my plane and all of our ghost samurais that we had loaded onto our 80s plane have now been lost at sea, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing we're going to raid is the a sunken treasure. It's all ghost samurais.
Yeah, we have Tomb Raider. Where's Ghost Samurai Factory Raider, right?
That's a long title, right?
Yeah, they're printing them out at the Ghost Samurai Factory these days. And,
So much like a lot of depictions both in media of both the Bermuda Triangle and Atlantis, Yamatai is shown to have various shipwrecks from various time periods wrecked on its shores. You can open up the first image there. That'll be available for the patrons. I grabbed a screenshot when I was replaying the intro of the first one. You'll see like a sailing ship wrecked on the rocks when you get to the title screen, basically.
Yeah, very, very Wrecker's Coast. This is not the first shipwreck to meet these shores.
No. What was I going to say here? Oh, and the platforming tutorial is like a crashed American World War II bomber hanging off a waterfall as well. So cool. There's like all stuff from different eras. Everyone falls to the Dragon's Triangle, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
A cliche that they reuse in every single game that is still a cliche that I love. I loved it in The Witcher 3. Is I love finding a shipwreck somewhere a shipwreck don't belong, dude.
Oh yeah, classic.
Up
on the side of a mountain.
There's a Byzantine ship in the second one, frozen into a glacier. Fucking awesome. There's like a Spanish galleon in an underground cave in the third one. Fucking awesome. And like obviously the World War II bomber crashed on like the magic Japanese island. Fucking awesome. I love that shit so much. Always gets me.
They're Americans. They probably just like really like turned it up to 11. You know what I mean? The speed and did like a sick jump. And like there's probably like bald eagles flying off the ship as they crash into the side of this. Pacific Island.
Yeah, it's just like in the middle of the jungle. There's like, crush a Bud Light can against his forehead.
First and last out was go.
Oh man. So after the apparent suicide of her father, Lord Richard Croft, Lara swore to continue his research into ancient ruins and civilizations, all to prove that his crackpot theories were correct. Mm-hmm. And after the British tabloids had posthumously smeared him as a quack, this is one of my favorite things where like British gossip rags are notoriously venomous in real life. Yeah. And if you want to open up the next one, it is just like the headline they have. It's basically like this man allegedly kills himself in his home in front of his teenage daughter. And that the tabloids in Britain are just like, dumb fucking idiot, what can't read, kills himself. It's I mean, wild claims debunked.
They are the gossip rags are notoriously bad, like you say, the killed princess die, right? But I love the idea that they're following this like archaeologist.
This, like, yeah, I know.
Like, professor, like this person who obviously nobody would care about in real life.
Like he would be a Joe Rogan guest, right? Like he does, because he's had on Graham Hancock, who I think is a quack, but he's at least interesting.
He's absolutely a quack, in my opinion.
I mean, that's what I said. He's everything he says is insane, but he's fascinating at the very least. He's one of those ancient society guys. I've said this before. He doesn't take credit away from the people who were there already, right? Which is makes him better than the alien dudes. But regardless, yeah, like. basically the headlines are just like Joe Rogan guest commits suicide. They're like, fuck this idiot. Like, yeah. when Graham Hancock dies, that's not gonna happen.
Right? No. Like, nobody's
it's not gonna be
about
front
it.
Page news. Like, nobody's no one'll know. Lara's mother, Amelia, was her last name is her maiden name is DeMoray. Amelia DeMoray.
Is it implied that she's Amelia Earhart?
It's the original name of her is a reference to it because Amelia Croft does die in a plane crash. However, she is not eaten by crabs, who may or may not have taken down the plane,
knowing there was
a delicious woman in there.
Maybe Amelia Earhart crash landed on Christmas Island and started an ancient civilization. Did you ever think about that?
That would be a great plot for Tomb Raider 4.
Be a great plot for a Lore Boys Christmas episode.
Yeah, Crabs of the Tomb Raider. Rise of the Crabs of the Tomb Raider. So Lara's mother, Amelia, was very much the inspiration for much of Richard's work. A plane she was on, like I said, crashed in a mountain range, which wasn't specified. In my head, I would say it was probably in South America because there was a very famous plane crash in the Andes, I believe, where a soccer team went down and two of the guys managed to drag themselves to civilization to get the survivors rescued.
Didn't they eat each other? What survivors? I thought they all ate each other.
They didn't eat everybody.
I haven't seen the movie.
The living ate the dead. They didn't. I don't believe they killed each other. It wasn't as bad as like the whaling ship Essex or that wagon caravan that also did it. Whoever the fuck they were.
The Donners? Yeah, the
yes,
Donner Party.
Donner Party. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. No, they didn't kill each other. They didn't draw straws and kill each other. I believe they ate the dead because the corpses stayed fresh since they were crashed in the ice. Amelia Croft also, after writing one letter for Lara and one letter for Richard, did eventually die of exposure, and her body was found and recovered by Richard Croft, who had figured out where she had crashed and gone to find her.
Okay.
After finding her, Richard Croft dedicated his life to finding ancient and magical way to resurrect her. So the first two games are very... So maybe if Graham Hancock was on Rogan being just like, my wife is dead and I'm going to find the secrets of resurrection to bring her back to life. maybe the gossip rags would talk about his death, because it is like particularly crazy, right?
Kind of like an iron spiked crown and a skull painted on a mask on his face.
Yeah, so you know, Joe, I just really am into the necromantic arts these days. It's like there's so much secrets there, you know, these untold potentials, really.
Sorry, I don't know what Grant sounds like. I've never heard him speak.
He's just a British guy, very soft-spoken. I was thinking about him a lot on this one. It's funny, my buddy I saw last night, because I was in the process, like, talking to him, I was like, oh, I'm going to write a Tomb Raider episode. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about Graham Hancock. A buddy of mine is actually a big fan of his work. Like, he finds it very fascinating. Mm-hmm. And he has a signed copy of, like, Fingerprints of the Gods from Graham Hancock, because him and his dad, like last year, went to a seminar of his. And okay. I didn't, like, shit on it, because I was like, hey, this thing you like is stupid. But it is interesting that he, like, has a signed book, and I ran into Stuart yesterday after years, right before doing the Ancient Civilization episode, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm like, if you're out there and you believe Graham Hancock, that's your God-given right. This is just my dumbass opinion. Mine's no more valid than yours. To me, it's, I can see enjoying it from the same reason I feel like I might enjoy reality TV, in that I know it's completely fake, but it can still be really fun to just like suspend your disbelief and believe in, would be how I would look at it. I don't know. Yeah. To me, it's the classic Occam's razor. Like, yeah, sure. This is a lot of evidence that this stuff could have happened, but you're jumping through a lot of hoops to explain what a much simpler explanation already explained hundreds of years ago, you know.
I watched there's a great YouTube channel called The Minuteman, and he's an archaeologist, mm-hmm. real one.
Yeah.
And he does like a five-part review of Graham Hancock's Netflix show. So he would be reviewing Richard Croft's Netflix show in this universe, right? Lore Boys canon, of course. Yeah.
Sure.
The video game version of The Minuteman. And he was just like, yeah, Graham is saying that all these like ancient Turkish homes have their doors pointed at the star Sirius in the sky, and it's just like, yeah, I guess maybe, but like, don't you think all these homes are pointing in the exact same direction because everybody on Earth can see the sun, and you need to let the sunlight into your home? It's like, yeah, it's that's why. Because one of my favorite things about Hancock, and Croft is like a what if he was right sort of character, is just like the, it's like, oh, this place is older than we expected, which is true. Like Göbekli Tepe is older than the pyramids, and it's like the oldest megalithic structure that we know of or whatever.
Sure.
He's like, I think it's older, and presents zero evidence. It's like,
it's like,
okay.
Why? It's already cool that it's old. You know what I mean? Like it's already cool. Archaeology is already cool. You don't have to take these extra steps to go and try and like get crazy with it. But you sell a lot of books.
Yeah, you do.
Beats friends, so.
And it is fun, and it does no harm, right? It doesn't take credit away from the people who were there. What one of the other things, just the other, I guess, all within the ancient, the, yo, maybe archaeology was cooler, is he always says, like, mainstream archaeology is conspiring against me. Which, yeah. In Tomb Raider, they were conspiring against Richard Croft. It is a video game, so he was correct. But, like, in real life, it's like, Ki bono, dude. What do you think? Yeah. Egyptologists are like, well, we couldn't possibly allow anyone to think the pyramids were slightly older.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you hiding?
Why the fuck not? Yeah. I mean, exactly the same reason why in real life he wouldn't be front page on the London Times.
Exactly. and then whatever, we've got more on Eternal Life in the next segment coming up, but there's a little family photo there of the Crofts. So little baby Lara, her kind of, like you said earlier off air, the uncanny valley, of a mother, and then Richard Croft, her dad.
Yeah, very, all of them very uncanny valley in this photo, which I assume is like an in-game photograph that you can like pick up and interact with.
Yeah, it is a collectible, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, another great part about the game is the voice actress for Lara. The in-game dialogue sometimes is bad, but when you find an artifact, there's always like a little paragraph of her like geeking out about this cool thing she found. Yeah. Those are the best part of the fucking game. Like, oh, it makes collectibles good because she's like, oh, wow, this is so cool. Inlaid jade and obsidian all put together, like some Aztec shit she found in the third game. It's like picking them up and listening to the little blurb about the thing she picked up is also great. Like a shell casing, whatever. Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah. So Lara's first expedition, based on her father's work, was to be to Yamatai, which is what we opened with, the Japanese island in Japanese Bermuda Triangle, with some funding from Dr. James Whitman, a disgraced archaeologist and anthropologist. So now we're two Hancocks deep at this point. she pays for passage on a ship named the Endurance, a ship captained by her father's friend, Conrad Roth. I believe also that he taught Lara many of her survival and combat skills. Like
Roth fella.
Yeah, this Roth guy. Because I remember the first time I played through, because I played it through on PS3 as well. I was dating a girl at the time, and we just combined our PS3 libraries.
Okay.
I played her version, or her copy of Tomb Raider, and I do remember like a phone call or a walkie-talkie call with Roth, and it's like, oh, you'll be fine, don't worry, I've taught you enough, you're a Croft. So it's like, I guess he's... You need to explain why video game character can use a gun now, right? Like, whatever. One thing I do find interesting for realism and annoying for gameplay is the stealth takedowns.
Yeah.
Are because Lara is like 100 pounds and visibly 5'4", killing a guy in body armor, like one of these PMC goons who's like tomb raiding instead of her. It like a stealth takedown takes like 4 or 5 seconds sometimes, because it's like, yeah, obviously it would take a woman the size that long to kill a man, but like, this is a video game. She has an ice pick. Just hit him in the back of the head. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Just ice pick through a stupid ass helmet. It's a video game.
Exactly. Like, this is the realism you choose. It's like, well, this a little girl like this could never choke a man to death in a second. It's got to be like, like choking him with the bow or whatever, him with a bowstring. I'm like, just speed it up here, fellas.
Yeah.
You can unlock a passive that allows you to use a combat knife to slit men's throats, which. Frankly, I think they just should have done with like an arrowhead or something.
Just,
fuck,
just be free, yeah.
Exactly. So also on the Endurance were Angus Grimaldi, the helmsman, Jonah Maiava, the cook. He's a big Polynesian guy. He's the only supporting character who is in all three games. And he is great. I like that character a lot. Jocelyn Reyes, who is a mechanic, Alex Weiss, a technician and electrician, and then Samantha Nishimura, who is a documentarian, and the alleged surviving descendant of Sun Queen Himiko, who was the real life and in-game ruler of Yamatai.
We've talked about, I feel like we've talked about Himiko at some point, but maybe I'm thinking of,
she's,
maybe not.
Her name is used because there is, we will get into the real mythology that has happened since the disappearance of Yamatai. It's very cool. She's just like a probably a real person. Like, and this is me because I'm very agnostic, very much like Jesus, like very probably real, but has since kind of passed into legend and myth because like the last documented contact with Himiko was in like the 3rd century, which we'll get into. So.
Okay, cool.
And yeah, there's a bunch of shit there.
You heard it here first, Christians. Pete says Jesus is just a myth.
I said probably real.
You said just a myth. You said he's just a myth these days and not real. And he said, and Pete also said that Jesus does not love you.
You can't put these words in my mouth just because you're editing the audio. Fucker. So the ship was named after the real Endurance, which was part of Ernest Shackleton's 1915 expedition to Antarctica. White people always be having names like Ernest Shackleton, but yeah, no.
I was going to say earlier, like all the, like that's a lot of good names that you listed out there. And like, obviously it's plenty of them very British, but I thought just a very good list of you trotted it out for us.
It's a real, the crew of the Endurance in game is a very like college campus pamphlet spread of people. Like, you know, it's a very Noah's Ark crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but like also the other thing is like people, like the Age of Exploration is where all the good names went, but all these men died in pack ice being idiots trying to find the Northwest Passage, which is why no one gets named Ernest Shackleton anymore. So the real Endurance became locked in pack ice and then was crushed by the ice and sank, leaving her crew living on a massive ice floe for 2 months. So they had to abandon ship and just get onto a big chunk of ice. And then she was crushed and sank. And they just lived there with their lifeboats and their tents and all that shit on a big chunk of ice.
They saved. Wow. Yeah,
exactly. One of the weird details about the Endurance is that they were just like, they were so worried that the cat would starve or freeze to death that they shot the ship's cat so she didn't have to suffer.
Okay, well, I mean, they're not going to give the cat food in a survival situation, right? And it's like you're on an ice floe.
No, exactly. It's like you don't get a dried ration of a guy who died last night, cat.
Yeah, definitely not.
Right, so they lived on a massive ice floe for 2 months before making the insane 5-day journey to Elephant Island. So you can look up where Elephant Island is if you want, listeners and or Ethan. But if you want, in 1915, they had cameras. So if you want to open up the black and white and I think the black and blue photos is an actual photo of them launching their last life raft off of the pack ice to go to Elephant Island. So these
couldn't be their last one.
7 guys or whatever.
Who's taking the photo then? He's just getting left behind because he's taking the pictures.
You can run out in the shin-deep water.
Yeah, it's freezing cold. They're in the Arctic Circle, man. I mean, they're all
Antarctic,
waiting through the water.
Yeah.
But
yeah, they're all waiting through the water.
But I thought you said it was the North... Wait, where's the Northwest Passage?
Northwest Passage is in Canada. These guys is the... Shackleton was the was an Antarctic explorer.
Oh, I thought you said they got crushed in pack ice in the Northwest Passage.
No, sorry, I was talking about separate, like Captain Crozier and shit like the Terror and the Erebus and all the guys and some other one.
That listen to our Transformers episode.
Yeah, it's in there. Precisely. Yeah, exactly. Right, so they made a 5-day journey on this life raft, which they named the James Caird, and actually made it to Elephant Island, which is a small island, I believe, near like the tip of Argentina. Or something like that.
Well, yeah. Near's generous.
Okay, it near in relation to like closer than like they're closer to home on Elephant Island than they were being crushed to death in pack ice near Antarctica, right?
Yeah,
they're making it back north, which from here is getting warmer back to South America.
That's fair. The distance from that's not.
What?
I was going to look at the distance from Elephant Island to Argentina. It gave me a way too big number because it's taking me to the center of Argentina, not to the...
Just like the tip of Patagonia?
Yeah, 245 kilometers, is that right? I don't know. Anyway, it's far.
Yeah.
Far.
It's very far to be in a life raft in 1915.
Yeah, in Antarctic waters, which I think are notoriously pretty choppy.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, yeah, like, I know you're a big fan of it, but, like, the age of exploration and, like, the race for the South Pole, the Edmondson journey and things like that were just so, like, what a time to be alive, man, and just be, like, you know, you're working, you're 7 years old, you're working in a factory, smoking cigarettes, listen to the radio, not on a break because you don't get breaks, and just, like, cheering on your guy as they're announcing, like, how much progress they've made across this, like, desolate, thousands of kilometers wide continent at the far end of the world, which you will never see and probably never see a map of and have no real understanding of. But
and can't read, so if they showed you a map, it could be a fucking anything, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a very cool time to be alive when there's still so much, like, are they just going to find, you know, dino land there where there's actually a bunch of rainforest in the center? And we just don't know, you know, like, nobody's ever been there. Nobody's ever seen it. There's no satellites. There's no nothing.
Yeah.
We have no idea what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
So cool.
I mean, it is just a million square miles of uninhabitable wasteland, but it could have been cool. End up finding fossils on Antarctica. There are Antarctic dinosaurs, but of course, at that time, it was like a tropical archipelago.
Well, these dinosaurs use tools. This one's got a TI-83 calculator. Fucking dinosaur, like the dinosaur fossil from Jurassic Park, which is like a stupid calculator.
It's like just made of wood. It's just like in his hand. Or like there's a calculator locked in amber, and that's why they got like the equation.
So they got aliens. Huge. Yeah.
Oh my god. So after their 5-day journey to Elephant Island, they took a second, more insane 17-day journey to South Georgia Island in an open lifeboat, and then they were eventually rescued because it was close enough to like whaling areas, basically.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Shackleton died in South Georgia. So I don't know. I don't think it was part of that trip. I don't know, but
no, he went back and died later. He did not make it to the South Pole, as far as I know.
No, it wasn't. It was whoever raced Edmondson. It was like a Norwegian made it.
The Norwegians made it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this whole aside here, just because one, I love the age of exploration. I think it's very cool. And also, it is very funny that they were just
It was Amundsen. It wasn't Scott. Scott was the Brit.
Right. Okay.
But it was Amundsen who made it there first.
Yeah, so anyway, love the age of exploration, but it's the fact that they were just like, yeah, I'm going to charter a ship named after a ship that was famously a failure and crushed in the ice. Right? It's just like, yeah, cool. Give me that one. He's like, you don't want the she'll never sink or anything like that. Yeah. It's like, give me Endurance too. Let's give it another shot.
If I ever had a ship, if I ever had a steamship, the only kind of ship that I want, because I want to name it the Fata Morgana, which is mirages on the ocean. So it's like desert mirages that you see on the ocean. They're called Fata Morganas.
Cool.
And I want a steamship specifically because steamships have the SS. That's what the SS means on boats. Steamship. So the honorable steamship, whatever.
What it means?
Yeah, and I would put the SS, I would make them big letters, and I would put it between Fata Morgana, so it would say Fat Ass Morgana. That would be the only boat that I want.
Fat Ass Morgana.
SS is steamship. Like SV is sailing vessel, I think. Huh. HMS is Her Majesty's Service, I think. Or Her Majesty's ship.
Yeah.
Something like that.
HMS Titanic. Oh no, it was the RMS Titanic and the Olympic were like royal something. So yeah, much like her namesake, Lara's Endurance wrecked off the coast of Yamatai, breaking her back and splitting into like the Titanic. The storm is one of the island's magical defense mechanisms, along with the host of immortal samurai Storm Guard.
Right. I remember the storm now.
Yeah, it's like right after the first cutscene where they introduce all the characters is the shipwreck.
Okay.
So real world records of Yamatai, which we can consider game canon, or at least lore boys do, because it all happens before the games and is cool enough. This old documentation comes from the Three Kingdoms era in Chinese texts, and they speak of a country ruled by a priest queen named Himiko. Records show that she had... Excuse me?
I said okay.
Okay. Records show that she had at least a brief relationship with the mainland, sending envoys and trading with the Chinese state of Cao Wei in the early to mid-3rd century. So we have old documentation. This place was real.
But we don't know where it is?
We do not.
Oh, yeah. Generations of Japanese historians, linguists, and archaeologists have debated where Yamatai was located and whether it was related to the later Yamato. Here you go.
Yeah.
How fun. So
after her death in 248 AD-ish, she was replaced by her younger brother, whose name I could not find. And shortly after he took over, Yamatai disappeared from the historical record, drifting off into myths and legends, being mentioned a couple of times in, like, the deep past by, like, 8th century Japanese texts and 12th century Korean texts. So the envoys that Himiko had been sending out from Yamatai were sent to, 3rd century Korea, whatever that was called at the time. But I think pretty consistent for quite some time. Okay. A lot of that area is. And yeah, like you said, historians still debate whether or not it's real or where it could have been located. So I was figuring that maybe after we take over Lore City, Ohio with our Patreon money, we could set out on our own expedition in our own doomed vessel.
Absolutely.
And bring our cats to find Yamatai.
Well, at least send some patrons out to die on a ship, right?
Oh, but that's probably better.
Yeah. to drown in Lake Michigan. Crushed by the ice floes.
So we're going to find more about this mysterious island and a couple more mysteries after the break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you had a good ad on your forklift.
I hope your ears are okay after Pete yelled, "Welcome back." You coming back from the break there?
Did I yell it?
Yeah, you yelled. You leaned into the mic a little. Some headphone users are going to be RIP.
I'm sorry, guys.
We've only been doing this for 8 years. We're still learning the ropes. Okay.
When the class action lawsuits comes in, I'll give you your $3 that I owe you for fucking your ears up. So Queen Himiko's alleged immortality was what brought Lara and the Endurance to Yamatai. However, in the end, she chose not to claim it, as Himiko's ritual involved transferring her soul into a new body and destroying the host soul in the process. Like the alleged Himiko, she had thousands of handmaidens and, like, other women in her employ, like, within her kingdom, and she would train one up, pick one, train her to be, like, the most scholarly, the most well-read, the most professional, the most beautiful, all this shit, then go through the ritual of destroying her body and soul and taking it over, basically.
Did she make them well-read because she retains, like, she gets their brain? Like, in the end, or... Like you would think her mind. The one thing I'll pitch a Lore Boys canon here is that maybe there's like there is some like level of guilt there where she's like wants this person to have like a quote unquote good life while they're around and gives them like the all-star treatment and like teaches them about the world and all that before
burning their soul out of their body
before sending their soul on a Uruguayan flight that crashes in the mountains and cannibalizes it.
Yeah, we can Lore Boys canon that. Himiko in the game is presented as profoundly malicious.
Yeah,
but right. Why not? It's probably just to keep the charade on more than anything of just like, oh, you know, it's like the movie The Island, right? Yeah, where it's sure, just like, sure. Oh, I'm going to Elysium.
I'm winning
whatever.
The lottery. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And it straight up is just like a rich person organ harvesting operation. Like, okay. But with magic.
So it is the same as the story of Jesus.
Whose organs did he harvest? I don't remember.
Well, he harvested the apostles, right? That's what he was training them up to do.
Oh, so you take like, yeah, like St. Yeah. Paul's, yeah. Like St. Paul's organs. But Judas exactly. sold his kidneys to the Romans for like 30 pieces of silver.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
is why he had betrayed him, because that was rightly Jesus' kidney silver.
Jesus' kidney. Those were my corneas. You had no right to sell them.
I do remember that part of the New Testament. Quote. Those are my corneas. Oh my god! And
Jesus said, "Thou shalt not selleth mine corneas,"
despite the fact they lie within thy head.
Pete's taking down notes for what I can only assume is artwork of
it is yes
Judas carving out his own corneas to sell to the black market.
There is that one, but I forgot to write down earlier rating a calculator in amber, which I thought okay. would be a fun one to put Lara into. Himiko in game tries to use her living descendant Samantha Nishimura from the Endurance, but is stopped by Lara Croft. It's the last boss fight. You save okay. her from being possessed by Queen Himiko, who okay. is finally killed because she doesn't have a new vessel to go.
Nishimura through. Was the documentarian, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Her and Jonah are the only two characters, I believe, who survived to the end of that game. And she
the
is
first game. Okay.
not in any of the subsequent games and is never even spoken about in Tomb Raiders 2 and 3. No one ever mentions the Endurance. But at some okay. point, Lara does say, like, I've lost too many people. It's like, then stop bringing your friends into crumbling ruins, dude.
Yeah, crumbling ruins with haunted ghost queens with samurai armies. Like, just stay home. Stay
exactly.
home, Lara.
Just like just sit this one out.
You did it in the first one, right? You found you restored your father's name and proved that he didn't have quack theories. So like call it, hang it up, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. But
why not let evil win every now and then? You know what I mean? Come on, good guys.
Are they even evil? Like in the end, she never claims. She just destroys all these things, right? In the end, to keep them out of the hands of.
Not her. That's what I'm saying. Just let the evil guys win. Like, you don't have to be the good guy and destroy this stuff anymore. It'll be fine. There's plenty of evil people that are in charge of the world right now. It's going okay. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, none of them are using ghost powers to consume people's souls or steal their corneas, but I frankly don't know.
They actively are.
Yeah,
release the Epstein logs or whatever they're called.
Yeah. Right? Where'd all the corneas go from Epstein yeah. Island, dude? Yeah.
They use them as little like thimble shot glasses for the adrenochrome. Children's corneas.
I was just thinking like the tray on Stephen Hawking's chair. It's just a bunch of like stolen organs. So, thankfully, though, Antiquity and the documents are full of sources of immortality, the next of which is simply called the Divine Source, which led Lara and Jonah to Syria, through the Caucasus Mountains, into Russia, and then into Siberia. They were following the trail of a Byzantine prophet who spent centuries fleeing the Rus as well as the Mongols. Spoilers, I guess, for this game. The prophet is revealed to be a man named Jacob, who now lives in the city of Kitse, a hidden city within a geothermal valley in Siberia, which is the non-spoiler image, the kind of handsome Turkish guy there.
Yep.
That's him. That's...
Okay. That's and he lives in a Siberian dinosaur jungle. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
This hidden geothermal valley that is presumably much warmer than the rest of Siberia. And...
That's it. I think it was an excuse. I mean, we'll get into the volcanic activity in Russia, like, right now. But it's not... that far-fetched. And it's a very good way for the developers to change up the environment, because like the first bit of the game is in Syria, so you got desert ruins, then you have like kind of Soviet mixed with old snowy ruins in the middle of the game, and then the latter bit, or the like the denouement, is all within the geothermal valley to kind of sex things up a bit. So
they got 70% through the game and said like, how the fuck, wait, we need a jungle biome. How do we get them to a jungle biome
before
now?
She
like,
goes to cake levels, we need the jungle levels.
Just like you know, 11:30 p.m. on a Friday in the writer's room, just like one guy with like a cigarette, just like super lit, just like, put a jungle in fucking Siberia.
Yeah.
What are the gamers gonna do, rise up? Come on.
Yeah, it's his bong.
Yeah.
How are we going to explain it? It's volcanoes.
You guys ever heard of geothermals? That was Graham Hancock on Joe Rogan.
Oh, straight up. Yeah, he's just like, I believe there was volcanic valleys in Siberia. That's crazy, man. So there is, or was, at least, a decent amount of volcanic activity in Siberia in real life. Area called the Siberian Traps is speculated to be what caused the Great Dying, which I believe is the worst mass extinction that we know of in Earth's history, when massive parts of Russia just fucking exploded and led to the extinction of 90% of all marine life and 70% of all terrestrial life. I believe this is like trilobites had been the dominant species on the ocean floor for like 500 million years, and this is what got them at this point.
Cool.
I think.
One of the major questions of Siberian Traps was directly responsible for the Permian-Triassic mass extinction event.
So this kind of led to the rise of the dinosaurs because it cleared out the ecological niches that had been dominated by kind of proto-mammals and the weird, I think they're called synapsids, still like half-mammal, half-reptile ancestors, very odd-looking animals.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I'm glad my stupid dinosaur interjections were kind of on topic.
Yeah, not entirely off base.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so, okay. This is, yeah, turn the oceans to acid and removed all the oxygen from the air. That would do it, huh?
Yeah, that turns out 10% of marine life managed to survive in the acid oceans, which is crazy. And that's where we kind of come from, right?
They're fuckers. Those marine life forms.
Crabs and sharks, right?
Yeah.
Sharks are older than trees, dude. This is crazy.
Yeah.
So born in 843 AD in Constantinople in the Byzantine Empire, Jacob's life on the lam began when the Rus invaded Constantinople in 860 AD. This is a real thing that happened on June 18th.
Invaded? Oh my goodness.
The siege of Constantinople by the Rus, yeah. It started on June 18th, 860, when the Rus began their siege of Constantinople, pillaging and murdering people in the suburbs as they went. And like honestly, the 9th century was prime pillaging time, because at the same time as the Rus were laying siege to Constantinople, the Vikings were starting to invade the UK.
Yeah, England.
Yeah.
Jolly old England.
Or like Umbria and like the pre-unified
whatever they were called.
Provinces, time. Whatever the fuck they were called. Yeah.
The disunited kingdom.
Yes. the Vikings time.
The pre-united kingdom. I mean, yeah, I mean the joke I was making is that Constantinople has been sacked. Whatever, 100 times
constantly, in history,
right?
Yeah,
yeah. They should be constantly Sactinople, right?
Yeah, got him. Nice.
Got him. Take that, yeah. Constantinople.
Yeah, Istanbul's a way worse name for that city now than that is, Ethan.
No.
Constantly Sactinople. So the Rus in real life were, I think, nomadic raiders from the mountains between Asia, the Middle East, and Europe, like that area there, I believe. And they eventually, I think, disseminated into areas like the Ukraine and Eastern Europe and whatnot. And Russia, right? They are the Rus. Well, they're the Kievan Rus as well. So we've got Kievan, Ukraine, and then Rus and is the Russian people, right?
Makes sense.
So by the 10th century, the Prophet of Constantinople began to draw the attention of Trinity, who are the bad, evil guys who want to tomb raid for money instead of for destroying the thing you find, which is the
like
righteous thing to do.
They are like an Assassin's Creed ancient civilization or ancient society.
Yeah, it is an ancient secret society that would eventually just become intertwined with the Catholic Church. There are no ancient aliens or ancient civilizations per se, the same way there are in Assassin's Creed. So they're not like, they don't predate humanity. So they're not actual Graham Hancock characters. They're like very much like still regular time. But the Trinity is like they started the Crusades and whatnot in an effort to track down the Prophet of Constantinople to stop him from doing miracles, because the Catholic Church hasn't had a good miracle in decades, and this guy's making us look bad.
Yeah, fair.
Which was their excuse for trying to hunt him down.
Yeah.
So they eventually pushed him out of Constantinople, out of Turkey, and into the mountains, into Syria, and then eventually Trinity would hire one of the few remaining Mongol hordes to chase Jacob and his people deeper into Siberia, which is when they would eventually find their geothermal dinosaur valley and set up Kitse, and then they would be able to defend it from there. Kitse, sadly, has been laid siege to, like, not maybe as many times as Constantinople, but he definitely brought some of that bad juju with him, because he still had to fight off the Soviet Union in the, like, the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
When Stalin and Lenin finally discovered the magical jungle valley that they have in the middle of their country.
With the secret to immortality. I can understand why a dictator would be gung-ho about that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, he wouldn't have had that stroke and peed his pants if he had the divine source, right? So, Jacob appears to be a combination of both Christ and a folkloric character called Koschei the Immortal. Koschei, however, is an antagonistic character from Russian folklore who is usually trying to steal the love interest of the protagonist of the fable. So he's just like this kind of undying... It's K-O-S-H-C-H-E-I, if you want to look it up. If you're
I got it
clip.
Here.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were going
to... No, I like to
pull up. What would you find, Ethan?
The pictures, and I often will, when we talk about stuff, especially like real history stuff, I'll pull up the wiki pages, and then often I'll read them after we're done recording, because I just find it very interesting, like the folktales and things like that. So
yeah, I love that old medieval art too. Like, and we talked about this already on a previous episode, but that flat perspective is so cool.
And I mean, if I don't pull it up now, I will never remember we ever talked about this. So.
Mm-hmm. You got to look up Hermes Trismegistus, dude. Come on. It's going to be important for a trivia night one time in 3.5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
So Jacob's power came from an object called the Divine Source, something Trinity very much wanted for themselves. And
the Catholic Church turns out they wanted it, right?
Via
Trinity.
Can you imagine never needing to swear in a new pope? You just kind of refresh the pope every once in a while?
As a what? Divine Source? I think we need that.
So where it came from originally is unknown. However, it was initially found on the island of Rügen in Germany in the Baltic Sea. Real island, real place, all real. Jacob and his followers believe it actually is a fragment of Yahweh, the cool and violent Old Testament version of the Christian God. So that is the belief within Kitse, that is a shard of him. Because a lot of, we talked about it on the Divine Comedy episodes a lot. Like, God... Old Testament God is like an incomprehensible being. So the fact that the shard of him in the second Tomb Raider game is like this blue crystal that bestows immortality and healing powers onto a single prophet kind of makes sense. Because, like, you know, biblically accurate angel, biblically accurate God could very well be some sort of crystalline figure, like something so divine it's made entirely of gemstones or whatever, right?
Yeah,
so.
Incomprehensible.
Yeah. Neglected to get a picture of this thing, but it is a... like kind of this big around, like the size of a basketball, blue crystal that like shoots kind of a divine light into whoever's holding it.
Cool.
And anyway. Nice. Jacob and his followers believe that, excuse me, where is this? Roll that back.
We were talking about Yahweh.
Yeah, yeah. Its power has kept Jacob alive, as well as his army of Byzantine soldiers. So you still get the ghost army in this one.
Nice.
Thank you very much. It's kept him and his army alive for 1,100 years at the time of the game, roughly.
Cool. And so, like, do you know in the game, like, if they get killed in combat, are they destroyed, or is Joshua able to, like, resurrect them after that fact?
It doesn't happen in game, but they don't leave a corpse behind. They dissolve into, like, a kind of like a cloud of light.
Okay.
Or like, not a cloud of light, that doesn't make any sense, but like you kill them and they like dissolve in like a flash or whatever. They don't leave a corpse.
I guess, I'm mainly just wondering, like, if they've been defending themselves for so long, is it like, are you facing like the whittled down, like last remnants, or is it like they've fended off the hordes and after a time, you know, the Jesus figure is able to bring back the apostles?
Yeah, no, Jacob is just tired of it at this point. Okay. But no, like, he is confirmed to have, in quotes, been killed multiple times and has been resurrected. Like, it's very much like, the millennia of his death and resurrection is why he is now known as the Immortal Prophet.
And why he'd be tired of it.
I mean, how many times do you think you could handle dying? Right? Me personally,
zero?
Once.
I think zero. I don't think I can handle it once. I'd rather not.
Just be dead. You kind of handle it. That's the purpose, right?
No, but I'd rather not. You know what I mean?
No, we need We need is some fucking Epstein corneas to keep us going for forever, exactly. Dude.
Yeah, I can only assume that it's the foreskin tips, the Catholic circumcisions, which they turn into, you know, Jesus, like the fish into bread or whatever he does, turns foreskins into corneas, which then grant immortal life.
Right, of course, yeah.
So we got to start with the foreskins, Pete. No, no
contact lenses. Yeah.
Looking a little cockeyed.
It's a secret to immortality, you know. So after Lara destroys the divine source just by smashing it on the fucking ground, which is so funny how it's they've had it for thousands of years. And it may indeed be a fragment of the body of God himself. And like during the last boss fight, there's just a cutscene where he's just like, no, just destroy it. And she's just like holding this crystal. She's like, okay. And just smashes it on the fucking ground. Yeah. Like a piggy bank. And that just like nobody that did that.
Yeah. in 11,000 years of constant conflict, nobody like accidentally like hit it off the pedestal that it was like resting on.
Yeah. Or like whoever was carrying it never tripped. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It, like, if you could just throw to the ground and it just obliterates the fucking thing. It's just, yeah. All right, well, we finally did it. He does state, however, like, he does have a limit to how many times how many cornea foreskins he needs to implant, because he does say he's lived a long enough life, and then he turns to dust and blows away after thanking Lara for, like, releasing him from what at this point has been, like, just a prison of the living.
Yeah.
Where he's just constantly going, right? So, weirdly enough, though, Jacob's daughter, Sophia, does not dissolve, meaning that he had a relationship with a woman at some point in the past few decades who he was easily 30 times older than.
Yeah. I'm about 100 generations older than you.
Yeah, exactly.
We're technically related because that's just how it works. Like, when you go far enough back, you know, like you're always going to be related to me somehow via niece or nephew.
Yeah, it's like, so she's like actually... Like, she's, like, real-time 20. And one thing I was thinking is...
Jesus.
Yeah, she's, like, 20-something.
Like, 30s, you know, like, late mid to late 30s. But
yeah, no, she's, like, our age. Like, the character models. We're not 20, Peter. How old.
Peter, I hate to tell you this. We're not 20.
We're 32, I know. But one thing I was thinking...
How many could you handle dying?
Oh, fuck.
That's the kind of conversations that 20-year-olds don't have, let me tell you.
How bad was your hangover on New Year's Day after having 4 beers? Apocalyptic? Oh. One of the things I was thinking, though, was just like, maybe age of consent should reset after like 3 or 4 centuries, where once you turn 300, you can only start a relationship with someone who's 318. Like, you just like tabula rasa at some point.
Yeah, yeah.
Just so you don't get into this fucking situation.
Absolutely. I mean, like, the whole reason why big age gaps, and like, age of consent is what it is. I think it's extremely weird when a 30-year-old dates an 18-year-old. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. that age gap is just way too much for me. Your life experiences are so different. And thinking on, like, this guy who's, like, happy to be killed after living for 1,000 years is, like, obviously, think how much difficulty someone who's 67 has adjusting to modern culture. You know what I mean? like they cannot understand Gen Z at all. The technology that they use, the words that they use, the progress that they make, it's just like completely foreign to them, and all they can do is get angry about it and scream at Fox News.
Yeah,
like,
the immortal prophet's never going to use Riz correctly in a sentence, right? He's going to fuck it up.
Exactly.
Dude, could you imagine the boomer posting from a guy who's 1,000 years old?
Right?
like, it's not even minion memes. It's all, like, cuneiform memes, but with the same, like, the same, like, minions, text. Yeah. That's a good one.
Don't worry, I'm writing it down for you.
Thank you. Yeah. But it's all still saying the same bullshit. Like, it's like, yeah, come on, liberal, come and take it, but it's just like a pointed rock. Yeah, so anyway, that's the end of the second one there. It is a very good game, despite making fun of the Immortal Prophet there. Definitely worth playing. So finally we come to the third game in the trilogy, Shadow of the Tomb Raider, where Lara accidentally begins the Maya Apocalypse. And I wrote it Maya the whole time, which is how it was referred to in the documentation that I read about some of the real shit. I don't think it's Mayan. I think Mayan is like the language, and Maya is the culture, in the same way that Afghan is like people and Afghani is the currency, I think, is the order those things go in. I don't recall. Anyway,
I don't really understand what you were saying there.
But it's Maya. It's like
the Maya civilization.
Instead of the Mayan with an N, right? Like Canadian.
But you could call it, would you call it the Canada apocalypse or would you call it the Canadian apocalypse?
I would call it the Canadian apocalypse. Were I an anthropologist looking back after Justin Trudeau starts the Mayan apocalypse or whatever by removing the secret dagger from Parliament Hill. So, like nothing super specific was taken for this one. The apocalypse in the third game here that came in 2018, obviously very inspired by the end of the Maya calendar in the year 2012, right? Pseudoscientists and other ancient alien lovers believe that due to the Maya long calendar ending in 2012, that we should just expect the world to end. This, like we were roasting Graham Hancock before the break, the Maya didn't prepare themselves for like the Spanish, so they obviously were not telling people with electricity 1,000 years hence in 2012 that the sun was going to explode, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
You'd think they would have covered smallpox before they were like, well, we've got time for the sun. We could probably figure out a solution to that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So after discovering the key of Shakshel, a dagger-like key in the city of Cozumel, Mexico, and it like begins this earthquake. The first of the cataclysms for the Maya apocalypse is like a massive earthquake. When she removes the dagger, the entire city of Cozumel just is obliterated by an earthquake and just like earthquake and sinks earthcake. Into the Gulf. Earthquake. Yeah. And sinks into the Gulf of Mexico. So yeah, like
Cozumel's all caked up by an earthquake.
She is responsible for the deaths of thousands of people just by picking up this little knife here.
Yeah, maybe more, right?
I don't know if Cozumel is real. I didn't Google it.
Yeah, Cozumel's real.
What's the population?
So I'm looking up. Oh, it's like an island. Cozumel, Mexico. Population 77,000 in 2010. That's pretty close. Yeah.
Yeah. Game came out in 2018, so add a couple more. Maybe 82.
Yeah. Well, no, because it was in 2012 set, though, right?
No, the games are set when they come out.
Oh, so it's the Mayan apocalypse. Like, they were just wrong by 6 years.
Yeah, that's the mistake they made.
Well, because it's 2012, right? It's like the Mayan accident. The famous Mayan oopsie-poopsie, where they killed the world.
So the Mayans were just like, no, the clocks on your computers won't be able to handle all those digits. And where was I? Later on, Lara and Jonah discover that the key opens a silver box of Ixchel, a second relic that is needed to halt the progress of the end of the world. So these two items, if brought together, will stop the sun from...
Okay.
They call it the death of the sun.
Will it bring Cozumel back?
No.
Oh, no.
Actually, there is... all the chaos of destruction is never mentioned in the epilogue of the game. Okay. No one is, it's just you see that the box and the dagger are like on her mantelpiece at Croft Manor.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Like 80,000 people died for that. And you've got it in a glass case.
Yeah, it's the classic. We saved the city. Bikini Bottom burns in the background, right?
Well, yeah, it's like, well, thank God Trinity didn't get the hands on this, right? Yeah. We stopped them.
But again, they would have done something for profit with this.
Yeah, which is immoral.
Instead of resting on the laurels of their old money.
Exactly.
And all my expeditions.
Taking my Maya silver boxes back to Croft Manor that I've inherited. That was probably built on blood money. Let's be real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's all British wealth, right? Or most 99% of British wealth was generated through colonialism. So like, if you're an old rich Brit, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Who built it? Where'd you get the money for who built Croft Manor, Lara?
Yeah.
Richard? Yeah. You're marrying into like the de Molays, like some famous French crusader family too for her mom. Because I think because I played the intro to Assassin's Creed Unity, I think Jacques de Molay is like a famous crusader as well. It's like another famous name taken from history. If you could pull up that clip, yeah.
That one I don't know as well.
De Molay, it's D-E-M-O-L-A-Y. Just regular French, yeah.
De Molay International. An international fraternal organization for young men ages 12 to 21.
Like the YMCA?
It's fun to
stay. The YM de Molay.
De Molay.
So these two relics were created by the Maya god. I don't know how to pronounce this. I tried saying it out loud to myself, so let's see. X-Quick. It's X-Q-U-I-C. Quick, maybe? Like Shibalba is also spelled with an X?
Yeah. Quick. X-Quick.
Yeah.
X-Quick, the pronunciation guide.
Yeah, Nesquik. So Nesquik. She is the oh, no, Maya god of chocolate in llama's milk.
Speaking of blood money.
Yeah, Nestle.
Chocolate in general. But
yeah. Shikwik or Xquik is one of the daughters of the underworld Shibalba, which is the Maya underworld. Okay. While the key was still in place, the box had previously been stolen, or tomb raided, if you will, by another classic evil white guys. Spanish missionaries, baby.
Yeah.
So, like, the mid-game twist when you're looking for the silver box is the fact that it's already been taken by Spanish, like, colonists, by conquistadors.
Okay.
So, a Spanish missionary working for Trinity named Andres Lopez in 1603 had already taken the box. He found it and then afterwards was just like, well, no, Trinity probably shouldn't have this power. So, he did the correct thing. He simply moved it. Didn't tell anyone where it was, and then took it to his grave in a booby-trapped tomb underneath a Christian mission called the Mission of San Juan in Peru.
Okay.
So when you get it from him, sorry?
Chad energy. It's hard to, it must be hard to not only convince the other missionaries at the monastery that you need to booby-trap your tomb, but then to also get them to not touch it for hundreds of years, like the booby traps, and just maintain those. It's like
they've got the sarcophagus with the box up at the end of the wall, and it's just like they're all setting the like human sized rat trap springs, basically. Yeah, exactly. like putting them down.
Yeah.
The booby traps in this one are actually, I just brute forced the puzzle because I didn't really understand it. Where you have to like push in these like cranks or whatever into the walls with like these various depictions of Jesus and his carrying the cross.
Okay.
And basically if you get it wrong, it just like snaps shut these like handcuffs around Lara. She's like, oh no. And then just shoots a big fucking spike right through her head.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we haven't really talked about it, but like the getting trapped cutscenes in that, in the first game anyway, and I assume it continued on throughout the series, were always so unnecessarily violent to me.
Like, they're too long. And yeah. Wildly violent, yeah.
They're wildly violent, and I just remember one in the first game where you're going down a river, essentially, where there's these, like, hazards, or it's, like, a chute where they've, like, you're in a pool and you get dumped down this, like, chute or whatever, so you're riding the water down, and you have to dodge these, like, spike traps that are set along the way, yeah. And it's, like, she, like, catches herself and, like, holds herself and then, like, slowly gets impaled, like, under the chin by a spike.
I do remember that one, yeah.
Which is just like so stuck with me. I've gone on record in the past saying like I'm not a big fan of like gore or over the top violence. But yeah, like you say, like they're long, and I do remember. I think I remember that section specifically because it was a difficult section in a video game where it's like you kind of just have to memorize like where the obstacles are because it's really hard to react fast enough to dodge them. And so you just see the same cutscene which lasts 6 seconds or whatever. Like over and over and over again while
before
you're trying
you
to get
try again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, too much violence, I think, in video games these days. And I am a 1,200 year old man who's been living in Siberia for all that time. And
with
so
my dinosaur
I'm the authority
friends.
On, yeah. So I'm the authority on saying video games are too violent these days.
In the second and third ones, they are equally as brutal, but they're mercifully short. And I don't know. There's not as I do remember the chin spike one is like burned into my mind, but like falling to a spike pit in like an ancient ruin is never not gonna be funny, and it only lasts a second. Like you fall through the floor to a spike pit, you're like, ah, you fucking got me, of course.
Got me.
Yeah. So those are good, but they did tone it down. I'm just better at games, I guess, or I'm playing a shooter on PC instead of on PS3 at this point. I found the games fairly easy. I played on the harder difficulties, but it's the good kind of hard difficulty where both you and the enemy take and do more damage.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just like you have to be more careful. You're all glass cannons, which is it's how the Metro games did it, and I very much love that as well.
Yeah.
But there's not as many like in this one. There is like a tribe of subterranean cannibals where if you get killed by one in a melee attack, it will, like, grab you by the face and, like, bash your head into the ground. And, like, that one's too long, but it's the way it's shot at the angle. It's, like, you don't see your head, like, break apart or anything. Like, too bad. It's just annoyingly long to be killed by, you know, a goblin, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. To be beaten to death by a goblin.
Yeah, exactly.
To be beaten off to death by a Jamie.
Oh, well, I mean, that's pretty good.
The podcast demon.
I'd be able to die at least once if that's how I went.
Jamie beating you off to death.
I could make it to 1100 if that happened a couple
times. Over the clothes. You in a dark room lying on a table next to Angelina Jolie. He's got two hands.
Just like three of us in the front seat of one of those old cars that doesn't have a, just have a shifter.
Just a bench, yeah.
So, Shaquick, the creator of these relics, the goddess Shaquick, plays a pretty minor role in Maya mythology, at least according to the Wikipedia article on her that I read. It's very short.
Okay.
She is sometimes associated with the waning moon, but her real contribution to the creation myth was giving birth to the heroic twins Hunapu and Shablanke.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, Shaquick is an odd choice because in this particular version of the Maya apocalypse, the eclipse that is going to overtake and kill the sun at the end of the game, the Maya had an eclipse god. Like, they could have just used that
used
one.
That one. Would have made a lot more sense.
Named Aciliz. It's Aciliz. But yeah, Aciliz, okay. Or Ciliz, I guess, is the Maya eclipse god. And they were like, nah, just take Nesquik, the chocolate one. That's the one we're going to use for the apocalypse game. Twin heroes, this is real mythology now. Twin heroes are a staple of a lot of native North and South American myths. This is a bit of kind of kook speculation. I do think, like, warrior twin myths were carried through from Russia and Asia, like, through the Bering Strait or however people got here 20, 30,000 years ago, because a lot of Native American myths and Native South American myths have heroic twins. And if you go back far enough to other things like Remus and Romulus and whatnot from Rome, but that's way after people would have already colonized the Americas, right? Because they've been here for longer than Rome or even like China.
Oh,
like
yeah. Saying colonized is we're not colonized.
I know, there's no inhabited. Other people, right? Yeah.
Inhabited, yeah.
Like migrated, I guess, would be the term of like, because the people who came here are referred to as the Paleo-Indians.
Migrated, so you're calling them immigrants. That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah. And I'm out of here. I'm 1,100 years old. That's what my minion is saying. It's like anti-immigrant cuneiform minion. But yeah, the Paleo Indians would have brought the warrior twin legends with them, presumably, which is why, because of course they dispersed north to south, and all these cultures on the way down to the tip of Argentina have like this like part of the creation myth.
Okay.
Well, I mean, all would be an insane thing to claim. I guess I misspoke there, but like a lot of them do.
Very
right?
Sure, yeah.
All the Indians think the same thing about the warrior twins, dude. It's great. It's they're so simple and easy. Yeah.
Boy, history is easy.
Boy, yeah. When you look at it from my perspective, it's just simple.
Yeah. If you look through the lens of a confident white man, it's pretty easy to understand. Other cultures.
Aliens did it. I don't get it. So Trinity's involvement in South America dates back to when the Europeans arrived. They came over with them as they were big Catholics. However, the South American branch has kind of folded into something called the Cult of Kukulcan, worshippers of the god of creation and destruction. Kukulcan is one of the many cool South American snake gods who wreaks destruction upon the land. The cult currently is led by Pedro Dominguez, who you can pull up a picture of, handsome Latino man.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually born in a secret city called Paititi. This one is it's much easier to explain, the jungle city in Peru this time. this one makes a lot more sense.
How do we get the jungle city in Peru, though?
How do we get the igloos into Peru? Same guy. It's just like, it's on a glacier.
I mean, yeah, you go high enough up in the mountains in Peru to find an igloo
in
for
the
sure.
Andes, yeah. It's like
I think the Syrian desert would be harder to put into Peru. Although they have the driest desert in the world, right? That's in
Atacama
Peru,
or whatever it is, or something. Yeah,
it's around there anyway. Close enough.
Yeah. hold the clip. Right. Anyway, Kukulkan. Pedro Dominguez was born in Paititi, but left and was, and this is what doomed the natives. He was educated in the West.
Okay. Yeah. Classic.
Yeah. This is why he joined Trinity and then came back and I don't know if he created, I probably missed that, created or at least led the cult of Kukulkan, who is trying to overthrow Paititi, and he wants to use the power of the silver box and the dagger to remake the world. Again, a lot of the ambitions of Trinity are just like, we're going to remake the world. So there's like, it's like that benevolent fascism of just like, yeah, no, if we're in complete control, then there's no problems. And like, give me, the mercenary, the gift of immortality. And I swear to God, there will be no more death and destruction. Right?
No. We're going to put it in a generationally wealthy English person's house. Thank you very much.
Yes, exactly.
We're the good guys.
So,
as God, as Jesus, a white person intended, right?
Yes, exactly. The first white man. Born on the shores of the Red Sea.
Yeah.
That's going to be a fucked up title for the episode. Tomb Raider, the first white man. So Paititi is currently ruled over by the exile queen Unurutu, who is the last image I have there. This character, in-game, she is so well-written and so well-acted, and the animation and the mocap is so good. Honestly, like, Unurutu is one of my favorite, like, supporting game characters. Like, Rip and Power Queen, I loved every second she was on screen. So well-written, just, like, no-nonsense. Like, whoever played her, when they were like, you're the queen of an entire city, absolutely, like, no jokes, no sass, nothing. Absolutely in charge, in control at all times, like, so fucking well done. I really loved her arc of the third game there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Portrayed by Patricia Velasquez.
Who's that? Is she? Yeah, I wonder if she's in anything else.
You would recognize her. She's been in movies. She was in The Mummy. She's in some other stuff. The Mummy. The Tom Cruise Mummy. No, the Brendan Fraser Mummy. Tom Cruise made a she was like the old Anaxunamun, like the original Anaxunamun in the movie.
Right. I rewatched the Brendan Fraser the first Mummy last year. It holds up. That movie's great.
It's fantastic. It's I watched it in the last few years too. It's phenomenal.
I don't know about the second or the third. I haven't seen them. I don't think ever, frankly, but
I think I've seen the which one's the Scorpion King? I've definitely seen the Scorpion King.
That's the second one.
And then I've seen two.
Oh, yeah. I do recognize this lady. Of course. Yeah. She's fantastic. And making the transition from, like, real actor, that's offensive, from in-person actor to, like, mocap and voice actor, not everybody can do that, as we've seen with, like, phenomenal actors like Peter Dinklage, who, if you go by his performance in Destiny and Transformers Rise of the Beasts, cannot read. but you see him on screen in Game of Thrones, he steals every fucking scene he's in, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, like, anyway, excuse me. Lara eventually defeats Dr. Dominguez by shooting him a bunch. It's very funny when he starts absorbing the power of a god. Your bow and arrow and guns still work. So, again, another thing the Maya didn't prepare for. They're warning us about the apocalypse, but nothing on... As if the world would be static when they carved out that calendar, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Pointed sticks are the height of technology.
Yeah, yeah. Clearly. A big rock at the end of a stick.
It's like, whoa. I don't trust it.
Damn, fangled new technology this damn generation, eh?
Riz carved in hieroglyphs, which is just my word of the week now, because I think
it's hieroglyphs. Yeah.
No, Riz. Anyway, yeah. After stabbing, so basically, what you do is you stun him with your guns, and then you run up to him and stab him with the key because it's like a dagger. You're right. Key, yeah. Basically, in the end, after killing Dr. Dominguez, Lara absorbs the power, but she lets the Queen of the Damned, who is like the leader, the Queen of the... She's the yin to Unruchu's yang. She is the underworld queen, basically, the Queen of the Candles. Okay. And she sacrifices, or she extracts the power of the box from Lara's body and then sacrifices it to restore the sun, thus not undoing the 70,000 people that died in Mexico, but like ends the apocalypse. So another poor city that the U.S. has absolutely pillaged does not sink into the Gulf of Mexico.
At least Europe isn't going to be impacted by all this.
Well, certainly not. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Although Assassin's Creed, on the subject of ancient history, Assassin's Creed Rogue, which is a underrated one. That one opens with the earthquake in Lisbon, Portugal. The security system protecting the Peace of Eden under Lisbon is just like, somebody touched the box, sink the bitch into the ocean. And there's like a really good escape scene of like Lisbon collapsing into the sea. Yeah. Play Assassin's Creed Rogue, guys. You can get it for a buck. Like, it's really good.
I know personally the voice actor for that one.
Yes, I know. I have him on Facebook. He's like, he's just a Montreal guy.
Yeah, funny guy.
Plays Jake Cormack.
Yeah, and I mean, any game where you get to see Portugal slide into the sea has got to be a good game, right?
Based.
It's a great soundbite, I think.
Yeah, just add that one to the board. Leave a note. So in the end, like I said, she allows the powers to be removed, prevents the apocalypse, and puts everything in her home. She's like, well, no one will ever get this evil box and restart the apocalypse by breaking into my house. That would be insane. But she returns home, and in the epilogue, it just like ends the trilogy there. Everything is wrapped up in a nice little bow. So that would be the Survivor trilogy of the Tomb Raider games. I love them. I like the lore. I like the real world inspiration of all of it. I think they're great. Pick them up if you can. One of them's on Game Pass, and the rest is definitely cheap. So I've been your host, Peter O'Donnell. You can find me at Loreboys Podcast on Instagram. Big things slowly starting to come together. Hit us up. Give us a follow. Thank you to everybody who's followed us recently. We got another big bump there. All the likes, everything, all the messages, the responses, the story. Love it all. Thank you very much. So,
I just checked if you've been up to date with EGS and the free games, Epic Game Store, and the free games they give away on PC. You might, like me, own the trilogy. Because I was like, this, I'm sure I own them somewhere. And they are there, zero playtime, not installed, but on Epic Game Store because they were given away for free at some point.
I know you're doing your roguelike Pokemon thing, but like, if you want to roll credits in 10 hours and they're a lot of fun, you could get through all three, like, in a couple of weeks.
Doing my roguelike Pokemon thing, I did also buy Warhammer 40k Rogue Trader today and the Cyberpunk DLC. So,
oh, okay. The Cyberpunk DLC is fire as fuck, though. Yeah,
I also,
way better.
I was looking, like, I have some games. I bought Time Spinner recently, which is like a Metroidvania game that I still haven't touched at all, which I would like to play. I'd never beat Tunic. I got plenty of stuff to play. Those will sit in my Epic Games library for
at least you own them.
I have Citizen Sleeper, the sci-fi RPG that I wanted to start as well, which I haven't touched. I got Tales of Iron, friend of the show, David, got me. Haven't touched. there's a lot of games to play. Why do we got to make me feel bad about it, Peter?
I know you have a daughter and shit, but you could play a game with a female protagonist. Really inspire.
Right? Well, I have Imposter Factory, which I'm pretty sure has a female protagonist, and I haven't touched it all. So,
oh, you're the worst.
It's like I'm not a feminist. I just noticed. I just pulled up Imposter Factory. It's like a mystery game where you have to like solve a mystery, essentially. It has one achievement I'm just noticing, and that achievement is end the world. It just says do what must be done. How exciting.
I see.
I'll play that this week and let you guys know on the bonus audio next week if it's any good. Like we said earlier in the show, if you want to listen to our bonus audio where we talk about kind of what games we've been playing, stuff going on in our lives, more casual conversation between the boys, you can check out our Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys, for more information on that. We do have an Instagram. Pete, you want to talk about the Instagram at all?
I did already.
You already did? Okay, well, I wasn't listening, Peter.
Yeah, clearly you were looking at whether or not you owned Tomb Raider and then decided not to play it.
we do have a Jimbo who's usually joining us. If this is your first episode, there is usually a third person on this cast who would plug the Discord. There's a link in the description below where you can shout out the boys, you can chat with us. We're usually in there a little bit. The patrons get access to a couple extra channels like Patron AMA, where we do our best to answer any questions that you ask, though we're not always good at answering them. Somebody asked today, what's your guilty pleasure TV show? And all three of us were like, damn, we don't really watch TV. So,
I know, that was so disappointing. I was like, TV? What the fuck are you talking about?
I wish I watched TV to answer your question, Turtle, but I don't. So,
what are you, 1,000 years old? Ugh.
Yeah, exactly. Turtle's such a boomer. There's a lore request channel where you can request us to cover lore. Somebody requested more Bionicle today. Somebody requested Lord of the Rings today, which we've done several episodes on. And Magnus, who's been around for a long time at this point, was surprised that we've done more than just Shadow of War, even though we've definitely done plenty more episodes. Like
five.
We've done a lot of Lord of the Rings at this point. I would love to do the Numenoreans someday.
Oh yeah, that's a great. I want to do Rohan. Is on my personal list on my phone.
Yeah, there you go. So get into the Discord channel, the Discord server, if you have a Discord account, and you can join the lore request channel, or you can send us an email, loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. We'll read it when we do a mailbag, which we do periodically. We probably have one coming up sometime soon. The fun thing is we never know when we're going to do them. It all depends on when can we all get together and afford to get drunk for a night. Cause usually we get pretty close to blackout drunk on Twitch and read some emails, have a good laugh.
Once during Bloodborne.
Yeah, that's true. That was after we finished reading the emails when Jamie and I started playing Bloodborne, and we were talking with somebody from
Australian guy,
New Zealand,
right?
Shellen, yeah, was his name, and I don't remember why we were talking to this person or how we were talking to this person, but we were playing Bloodborne talking to this person, as far as I can remember. Who knows? That was years in the past. So you can get in touch with us, loreboyspodcast@gmail.com, or contact at loreboyspodcast.com. If you want to support the show, there's Patreon, which I plugged already. And if you don't trust Patreon, we do have Loreboys Prime, which we've always had. Of course, like always, we ask for a little something in return to be a part of the exclusive club. So this week, whoever can sink Portugal into the sea will get to become a member of Loreboys Prime this week. We'll need some kind of proof that you're the one that did it, I suppose. So, you know, the golden apple, which you use to harness the power of the gods and, you know, cause the mountains to crumble into the sea or whatever it may be. Make sure you bring that as homework. We'll probably take the divine power from you when you're done with it, just because like any good pledge in the Loreboys fraternity, you'd want to make sure that you're given the real goods. You're paying it up, right? It's like an MLM. The Loreboys Prime, basically, where we're going to ask you to recruit other people with divine powers so that we can then take their divine powers as well and give you a little sprinkling of some leftover divine power for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. Why do you need all that divine power? Why don't you want to just give it to us and give us immortality? If the Loreboys were immortal, that means that the Loreboys show would never end, which is presumably something you want if you've made it this far to the episode.
The thousand-year Loreboy empire.
Hit us up. I think that would constitute it. Loreboys.
Loreboys.
Out.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.